Hello and welcome to Once Driven, Forever Smitten, the Vauxhall Podcast. I'm Dougie Rankin and I'm joined by Pete Sell. First things first, we'll do some introductions and tell you a little bit about who we are.
I used to be the editor of Total Vauxhall magazine. That's what a lot of people used to know me for. They might latterly know me for doing stuff with lorries because I'm currently the editor of the Truck and Driver magazine. But in between all that, I've been messing about with Vauxhalls ever since I was 17. And I've never really grown out those ones from the 80s and 90s. And I'm joined by you, my good man, if you want to introduce
Hello.
Yourself.
Hello, I'm Pete. I'm not so well known in the Vauxhall circles.
Yeah, by choice.
By choice, yeah. But, you know, like Dougie, I've just got an affliction. I'm stuck. I love Vauxhalls. I guess it goes back to my grandparents, really, being involved in the Vauxhall dealership since 1946. Sort of earliest memories was hooning around the Scottish borders in Cavalier and Calibra turbos, my uncle taking me out. So, yeah, and working at a Vauxhall dealership when I sort of was at school and onwards. And, yeah, that's it. I'm basically like you. I'm stuck with Vauxhalls. I can't really mess around with anything else, which is fine. At least you're out there. There's someone else who does it as well. It's not just me.
There's a lot of people. The point of this is, yeah. Old Vauxhalls, they're very, very popular. There's a huge following for them, but there's not very rarely crosses over into the mainstream.
Yep.
Car culture. That, I mean, British Leyland cars have got a huge following. So is Ford. You'll notice on social media and things. But Vauxhalls tends to be pushed to one side, even though there are so many of them and they were so incredibly popular. So
the benefits, of course, that we don't have to spend half as much as the Ford boys to get some of the more interesting cars throughout Vauxhall's history, which is good. Because I think I'd be completely bankrupt if I had a Ford issue instead. So what's in your fleet at the moment then, Dougie? What have you got?
I mean, I don't know how many I've owned over the years, but I'll run through what I've got at the moment, which is I've got an Omega GLS 2.5 V6 manual, which I bought in 2018 with 6,000 miles in the clock. It's now got 23,000 on it. And what I found over the years is these cars will find me, or they'll just drop into my lap. That one was posted on Facebook for sale just as I happened to be looking, and I just phoned up and said, I'll take the car. And they were like, do you want to go and see it? I said, yes, I am going to come and see it, but I'm buying it off you.
I've got That sounds like a familiar way of buying a car for you, I might add.
Well, it depends, because if you already know what you're looking at, then it's fine. I mean, I've got a Vectra CDX 2.2 petrol saloon that you went and picked up for me, which is a story in itself.
I did.
And that was 450 quid, and that's like a top-of-the-range car owned by an old person, and that thing's been brilliant. But that was like some crap pictures on eBay, but you get to know, you only need three or four crap pictures on eBay, and then you know, you're like, wait a minute, that's good or it isn't. I've also got a Cavalier GL 1.8 with a 20SEH 130 engine in it, which has got a knocking bottom end. We tried to replace the big end shells in it and discovered that it's already got the biggest oversized shells in it you could get. So the crank's already been reground. So you can imagine the thrashing that engine's taken over the years. But obviously, I've got a spare bottom end sitting. I just can't get down to do it because of this lock-in stuff at the moment. I've got my Cavalier CD with the SRI 16-valve engine and interior. I've had that for 5 years. Got my GSI 3-litre Ford before, which is sitting down at the workshop. If I wasn't locked down, it would probably be back in the road by now. It doesn't need much. And I've still got my Vectra CDX 2.2 DTI, which needs braking because I can't fix it. That's still sitting in the unit.
Are you going to scrap that, or is that going to go? What are you going to do with that?
I'm going to strip it for bits because I can't get the bloody thing to drive. I can't.
Those 2.2 things, if you research it on the internet, there's a lot of people who are just like, they just had to give up because they could never fix it. And it's got a management light that comes on telling me about EGR, and I've tried everything. And it's got 175,000 miles, and the arches are hanging out it. And if you look at the CD, the other CDX I bought for 450 quid, it's not worth messing about with. I have also got an Iveco daily recovery truck and a Foden Alpha lorry. So, and the Total Vauxhall Astra Coupe. That's sitting in the drive as well. That's the one I usually forget about.
You started that a few days ago, didn't you? Did it actually run again for the first time?
Yeah, it starts and drives no problem. It's got a water
leak.
There's nothing particularly wrong with it, apart from the fact I don't like it, but nobody else is getting it. Yeah, people thought, I'll buy that off you. I'm like, no, you're not.
You haven't got enough cars.
Well, my dad, he's got a Qashqai on, like, what is it, PCP. And when that comes to the end in, like, 18 months' time, he's retired now, and he's like, he does such a small amount of miles a year. He's like, could you find me another car and sort of things? And I'm like, well, you could just have the Omega. I know it's like
you could
the road,
do.
But it just sits about anyway. For all the mileage that you do, you could use that.
Yeah, it will remain low mileage as well. So that could work, couldn't it?
Well, it doesn't do many miles and things, so I've got that to think about. So, yeah, I've got loads of cars I've never ever
grown out of it. I was into those cars when I was like growing up, when I was like 12 and even younger than that. I remember the first Vauxhall brochures I was removing from Wood's garage. I was 8 years old. So I've always been into the same kind of era of cars and never grown out of it. Anyway, Pete Sell, tell us. What's your fleet at the moment?
Well, it's not as big as it has been because, as you know, I spent a couple of years out of the country, so I've only been back just under a year. So I suppose Vauxhall-wise, I've still got my Nova SR, which I've had for, must be 12, 13 years now.
The rotten one that you were trying to sell.
Yeah, that's it. As time goes on, I just think, it's actually, I put it back to sort of road car standard now, taking all the road rally bits off it. And the interior is pretty mint. It's pretty original, actually. And you just think, is it worth going through the hassle of trying to do the rear chassis legs and getting it back on the road now? You look at the prices that some of the genuine SRs are going, well, advertised for, should we say. And it's just ridiculous.
I don't know. You'd have to size it up against, any three-door Nova's got a bit of a premium on it, even like a 1 litre.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, this is white non-sunroof, Mark II SR, J-Reg with the blue interior, not the red. It's a nice spec. And then really, actually, I bought probably about 6 months ago now, the car I've been working on today, I bought another three-door Nova in white. It'd been off the road for a few years, and I basically bought it to try and reshell the SR. And then I realised that this Nova Spin, 1 litre poverty spec car, with literally nothing, so no rear wiper, no clock, anything that you think could be marginally luxurious, hasn't got. Still got the original radio, and I just thought, this car is probably too nice to take rallying. So I've now, and that came with the 20 SEH 2-litre engine, came with the drive shafts, a few other bits and pieces. So I think probably I'm going to end up just doing a road car with that in a spin spec with the 2-litre 8-valve, which of course you've done a couple of over the years, and see how we get on with that.
It's a lovely conversion, that. I mean, a two litre 16-valve Nova is crazy. You know, it's tremendous fun, but it's like wild. But if you put a 2-litre 8-valve, like a 130 engine in a Nova, then it's kind of like original equipment. Plus, you could see how Vauxhall could have made that car back in the day to compete with like the 205 1.9. That would have been a hell of a car.
Oh, that would have been quite something, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because I mean, because I built one in 2009, put an SEH into a Nova. Yeah. It was a 1.2, and we put Mark 1 Astra GTE seats in it, and it was fabulous. We drove it to the Alps and took it.
Which one was that again? Which colour?
The China blue one. That was Lindsay's car, and it had 14-inch wheels on it, and it was just the SR steelies on it. I bought those SR steel wheels off a website, brand new, for like a tenner each.
That's a bargain. That is an absolute
That was 2007. Bargain. I managed to get a hold of them. So it shows you how different, I mean, imagine what sort of price they would be now. Do 50 mile to the gallon on a run.
Yeah,
like I thought it was wrong, you know, but I was filling the tank and checking the mileage that way. They're so nice. I don't know if I could handle having full-on spin spec with your standard seats and steering wheel and
drive
counter, you know, to go and take all the bits out of that SR and put it into that spin, but keep it externally a spin. But I would have the nice interior and steering wheel and rev counter clocks.
Yeah, no rev counter is a bit of a nightmare. I will give
I'm not into that.
Yeah, so I don't know. We'll have to see. But at the moment, got plenty of welding of strengthening busy. So I haven't really decided yet what I'm going to do. But we'll do the basics first. The other one, which I think needs a little bit more explaining because people just think I'm really stupid or mad. I was after a van, as I think I told you a little while ago. Well, sort of after a van. I was like, taking a few engines around and I've got a couple of the projects. And, you know, just the usual thing. You go on eBay, you've had a couple of drinks and you're like, oh, look at that, there's a Bedford Rascal on there. That looks pretty good. And it was one of those adverts that you talked about where it was either going to be really good or really rubbish. Like it had a few pictures, like for example, the seats were covered up with seat covers. And it turns out, actually, I didn't even win it. I was the third highest bidder. The seats are like the most mint seats you've ever done. It backs up the mileage of 88,000 miles. So yeah, I've ended up with a Bedford Rascal, spent a bit of money getting some of the bodywork sorted. I'm going to get it signed, written with the old Vauxhall dealership that we used to have. I don't know if you've ever driven one, but they're just hilarious.
I'm looking forward to the opportunity to come in and getting a drive in yours when things allow, because I have got 20 SEH manifolds sitting here ready for you.
Of course,
I can come down to England, you know.
Carrying capacity was like 630 kilograms or something like that. So
well over half a ton. A phenomenal amount of carrying capacity for something that's so small.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically an ant. It only weighs like 700 or kilograms. Going up a hill in Guildford, close to where I live, and it had been raining a little bit, and it's only got 40-odd horsepower, and the thing started to wheel spin going up the hill. I was like, I'm not going to make it to the top here. I need to go around with bags of cement in the back or something like this. Before I obviously went to Asia, I had the Monaro and a couple of other bits as well. So Boxall-wise, that's it at the moment. But I've been on eBay this afternoon. I'm eyeing up a couple of cars. It's a lovely, it's one of those ones where the advert could be a lot better. It's, I don't know if you've seen it. It's an LREG 2-litre 16-valve Calibra on there at the moment. Diamond right. Black, 8,000 miles.
A red top. It's,
yeah, red top. Last of the red tops, LREG. Yeah. Pre-facelift. So yeah, it looks all right. It's only 35 miles away, but of course the problem we've got at the moment is we're sort of stuck, aren't we? I'm not sure if it's an essential trip to go and buy a Calibra.
It's a difficult one. I mean, I know that the lockdown things are getting eased like a little bit, and they've said that you can go and drive for a bit to go and walk and do some exercise. And is the car actually taxed and MOT'd?
Haven't checked yet, only saw it this morning.
I've not been looking at cars on eBay, buying bits, and I've been buying tools, and I bought my exhaust and my tools and a few other things this week, but I haven't really been looking at cars as such. Not that I'm in the market, I'm really, really not in the market for anything. I need to
No, you're really not.
I need to get rid of that GL, and I need to scrap the CDX, and I was going to sell my recovery truck at some point, but I need to get that tidied up a bit more. I fitted a new wing on it this weekend.
Yeah, so you can't get to your lockup at the moment. So what, cars you've been working on?
No, I mean, I can't really go down there. I mean, it's not an essential journey. I mean, I could drive down there. It's not that busy. But no, my old Astra GT 16-valve and your old Astra GT 16-valve has been sitting on the ramps there since Christmas because James, a.k.a. Kenzo, has been messing about with it slowly and he's went and dismantled all the back brakes off it.
Yeah.
I'm being good and, you know, I'm not going and, like, ignoring the lockdown and things.
I've
been observing it. So I decided I've got the three car spaces out the front and the monoblock pads. I started working on the stuff out there, so I sprayed the front end of the Blue Cavalier.
Why did you do that? Was it just stone chips
underneath the headlights because the car had got covered, it was all badly stone chipped, so I just sanded it down and sprayed it with base coat and then lacquered over the top of it, and it came out very, very nicely because that car I bought that car in 20, it was either 2013 or 14 I bought that car. And I bought it, a recurring theme in that all the owners of my cars are no longer with us.
The best cars.
All your SRIs and GSIs, all your sports things, I've got a million owners and they're thrashed into the ground and they attract a price premium.
Yep.
If you look at CDs, CDXs, GLSs, these cars are ones that are owned by owned people. So my Vectra CDX Petrol, that was the lady who had that was like 89 and she'd passed away. The guy who owned the Omega, he passed away, and the guy who owned that Cavalier, which I got from Warrington, £300 for that Cavalier CD, and he passed away as well, so they were just selling it to. So I bought it for the dashboard. I wanted the dash and the door cards because it was a beige interior for my GSI. So I went and got the Cavalier and the usual thing. I got it back up the road and I was like, I can't break this. But I still wanted the interior. So I stripped the interior out it and fitted all the SRI interior, including the grey dash from one that I'd broken for spares. It was a 2-litre 8-valve for a bit. And then I'd sold it to James and he decided he wanted a 16-valve engine. So we fitted one and then he sold it to another mate who blew the head gasket on it.
And it's...
So I bought it back for £700 with a full set of suspension and things on it. So then I got it back, did the head gasket, did a few other bits, and I've had that car for 5 years and put over 50,000 miles on it. And it's had really no mercy in that time. It's been phenomenal. It just needs a bit of tidy up now. It's up on axle stands at the moment on the drive, and I'm going to sand down the bottoms of the doors and the sills and give them a paint again while it's sitting there, because Vauxhall never made any red top engine with a long ratio gearbox. They were all the F20 close ratio.
Yeah.
And if you fit the XE engine, the red top, the XE, if you fit that onto a long ratio gearbox, it changes the character of it quite a bit. It blunts the overall acceleration, but it's got the original CD gearbox, so it's sitting at like 3,100 RPM at 90 miles an hour.
That's
so
perfect for you. Absolutely perfect going up and down the motorways.
Brilliant for long distance. It's much longer geared than the Omega and, weirdly, that Vectra CDX.
Yeah.
Because normally the Vectra had the long gearbox in it, but that Vectra, the 2.2, has got the short ratio gears. So it's sitting, it's revving at 3.5 at 80 mile an hour. And you really think, it dates it a bit because you think this should have a 6 gear in it, and it doesn't. And I always think...
Well, you were right, weren't you? You spotted that immediately when you drove it. And then we got the brochure out and you were like, it's exactly the same as the SRI, which makes no sense at all.
It doesn't,
that type of car.
It was a run-out model, so I don't know what the deal is. I mean, I think the F23 splits in half because the 2.2 engine, the starter motor, is on the other side. It's back to front compared to all the other engines. So you can't use any other gearbox apart from the one, but apparently the F23 will split, so I can get one from a V6 and add it on another one, but I don't want to be having to take the gearbox out and do all that. But I think I might do it, because I was impressed with the 2.2 engine. It's got a good bit of go about it, that Z22.
Yes.
That's a quick car for what it is.
The story of that was a rubbish eBay advert, wasn't it, that car?
It was. Yeah, because I was actually in London. I was at a dinner for work with Scania Trucks, and I was looking at it on eBay going, nobody's bidding it, voila. Because I only had like 4 bad pictures, and I gave the guy a quick phone call, and he'd said, you know, it's scraped on all the bumpers because it's been my old mum that's been driving it. And I was like, you just know from the way in certain pictures and things. I remember as far back as 2006, my mate Andy bought a Cavalier SRI, a black K-plater, a late pre-facelift, and he spotted it, and I were looking at the ad, and the ad was dreadful, but you could see in the ad that the car had all 4 of its original SRI fuel trims on it.
There you go. It's a good sign, isn't it? These little things that
I guarantee you that car will be all right if it's still got its original wheel trims on it. So he went down and got it, and it was like £290 or something.
Bargain.
Maybe not even as much as that. And that car, he sold it to Lynn's. She had it for years, and then I bought it back off her, and then I sold it to somebody in Manchester, and that was a great motor, that. It was one of the ones, it's kind of the ones that I would have liked to have kept, but you can't keep them all.
Right. I mean, you're lucky. You've got quite a bit of storage up here. Yeah, you do try, and you're doing quite a good job.
This is the advantage of living in Scotland and having, you know, cheap property prices and cheap workshops. I was really fortunate that I used to work out my mate's farm until a couple of years ago, when he decided he wanted to make some changes and we weren't allowed to work on cars up there anymore. So that was a bit of a crisis at the time, because I happened to find an advert in the free ads online saying workshop for rent. Drove out, met the guy. It's just a few miles from home. Took one look at it, and I was like, yeah, I'll take it right now. Do you want to deposit cash? And the guy was like, do you want to go and think about it? Do you want to do this? I'm like, no, I want this.
Definitely not.
it's one of those rare things where it's like a private sort of building, so it's off the grid, you know. It's just,
you're so lucky.
And I know from experience, from the many years I lived down in England, the cost of just finding anywhere to go and do something is just really difficult.
Yeah.
Maybe not for much longer. You might find that there's some units and things with a catastrophic downturn, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, sort of around the Guildford area with me, it's an absolute nightmare. I mean, I'm renting a garage off my friend, which is good. I'm renting a couple of council garages. Trying to get the combination of ones that don't get broken into and are still waterproof is a nightmare around where I am.
It's handy to know like a son who's got like a shed where he's not really using it for anything, but it's finding, you know, it's finding somebody through word of mouth like that. The other sort of things that you're finding, like somebody, none of your customers are around like that at work or anything.
It's not a bad idea, actually. I'm not sure I'd be too impressed with the cars I turn up with, though. Yeah, I mean, the problem is beyond that, you know, my dad's got a Morris Minor. I've got an old TR6 I inherited. The girlfriend's, I've got a car for the girlfriend. Dad's got a camper van and a Corsa for every day. So even his place is sort of full up with cars as well.
Stuff,
yeah, I think the girlfriend's, now she's learned to drive in it, the Abarth can go. That's a bit boring. So
needs
to go and fill it with something Vauxhall shaped, I reckon.
Yes, a Calibra.
It's all right.
I had a Calibra 4 before, a J-Reg 4-wheel drive, non-turbo, but total Vauxhall. Somebody phoned me up and said, would you like it for free? And it was up in Spalding or something, I think, somewhere up in Lincolnshire. So I jumped in. I'd bought myself a Ford Transit recovery truck when I worked in the magazine, which was the best thing you could ever hope to have. But it's also dangerous in that anything, anywhere, you can go and get it now. There's no logistics worries about that you're not going to be able to get it back from somewhere. You just get in your recovery truck, drive and pick it up, take it home.
Dangerous.
The guy had phoned me and he said, what had happened was he'd put it in for an MOT and the garage had condemned it. They said, you know, it's an absolute wreck. And I think what the garage was doing, they were hoping that he was going to sell it to them. I think, you know, they were going to say, you know, just sell it. And he didn't sell them it. He went and put it in his garage. And then he read Total Vauxhall and he was like, oh, well, you're clearly very passionate about these cars. You've fixed a lot of them up. You've put them back in the road. So he phoned me up and says, would you like this car? You know, but I want to give you it on the provision, you know, you're not going to break it and everything, if possible. So I went and picked it up, took it back, like had it up on the ramps, looked around it. And I was like, there's nothing wrong with it. The four-wheel drive wasn't working. The prop shaft had been disconnected years ago. But I looked around it.
Sounds
and I was
about
like,
right, yeah.
Put it through an MOT and it was like, I think it needed, I can't remember what it needed. It was very minor, but anyway, it passed the MOT and then I had this really tidy spectral blue Calibra. So
nice.
I used the Cavalier GSI's old prop shaft and transfer box. I locked the transfer box, put the prop shaft on it, fitted cruise control in it, which is my favourite modification of anything. And that was a fantastic car. I did look it up on the DVLA, and it's been sorting for a couple of years. And I would hope, I sold it in 2010 or early 2011, and I would hope that the condition that the car was and the fact that it was so standard, it might still be about.
Bodywork was pretty straight.
No, it wasn't rusty, no. I mean,
you
find with the early, like the early Calibras and pre-facelift Cavaliers at the GSIs, they had much worse rot problems. They did something to the body, they pretty much sorted it, because if you get like an N-reg Calibra, the rots, they don't tend to rot as much.
My R-reg SEA, it'd done, I think, 140,000 miles, one owner car that come into work as a parts exchange. But rust-wise, there was nothing compared to sort of what I've been used to, especially having chased Mattel with the Nova for many years on the welder. It was refreshingly
There's something about that, because facelift Mark III Astros are the same. They don't rot as anywhere near as much as like an L or a J Reg one, you know. And the Cavaliers were exactly the same. And you forget how quickly these rotted out as well. I remember looking at Cavalier GSIs in like 2002, and the cars were like just over 10 years old at the time. And you would see them driving about, and they would look incredibly low at the back end. And it was because the chassis legs had literally disintegrated, and the springs were sitting on the floor.
Yeah.
Quickly they rotted out.
Yeah, I mean, the story of your Mark II outside, what was it, a nightclub in Newcastle?
I suppose there's a lot of stories to go through, That's the story of my Mark II SRI 130. The back axle broke off it, like it fell off outside a nightclub in Edinburgh at like 10 o'clock on a Friday night. So there was a queue of people waiting to get in a nightclub. The bouncers were out here, you're going to have to move that. I'm like, I can't, the axles fell off the back. And they're like, likely story. I'm like, no, look. And they're like, oh, yeah. go through things in some sort of semblance of order, you know. Maybe, I mean, I don't do that in my other podcast for Truck and Driver. It's been derailed quite extensively, but yeah, we should go through things and set out a list of targets. What are the achievements for this podcast?
Yeah, I mean, we've obviously got to talk about specific cars going forwards.
Cars, perhaps events. We could have, like, to look back at, like, the... Well, if it's a matter of getting guests on, we're going to have to get some equipment, because this is just a trial run, and we're recording this on Zoom, and you're on your phone for a basic... Yeah. So just to basically have a dabble at it. This is like the pilot episode. Because you could go and look at the BTCC, you could look at rallying, you could look at racing in the 70s.
So many topics.
Famous models of car, you could go and try and source people who were involved with the Lotus Carrollton, you know, people who were involved with VXR when it came.
We've got
in
a few contacts we could do with that, can we? That could work.
Quite possibly, you know, get John Cleland on, you know, maybe.
Yep, absolutely.
There's quite a lot of value in potential for it, because unfortunately as well, with the difficulties facing print media, you know, Total Vauxhall, which became Performance Vauxhall, the axe fell on that late last year, so there's not a Vauxhall magazine anymore, which is a terrible shame. But also, I think the Vauxhall sort of scene isn't what it was right the way through. The comeback in the 80s, and then you had so many great cars, and they were on like a flyer right through the 90s. And then when I started on Total Vauxhall in 2005, they had the VX220, the Monaro had just come out, the whole VXR range, things were...
Yeah.
And also for the older cars, you know, Cavaliers, Vectras, Astras were everywhere. Vauxhall was such a massive...
It was.
A massive thing in terms of performance. And it's tailed off so much in recent years, obviously, in the build-up to PSA buying the company. The cars are kind of unrecognisable. I do really like the Insignia. I think that's the last of the General Motors ones, and I like that.
It is, isn't it?
That wide, low car, but they've stopped making the Tourer version already. There's no VXR versions of anything. There's no VXR Corsa or Astra. The brand, the company, just isn't as exciting as what it was, which is a terrible shame, because Peugeot, Citroën have made some... They've made some of the greatest hot hatches of all time.
They have. Yeah, absolutely.
So you would think, going back just a few years, you know, it would be quite an exciting combination of a French chassis with a Vauxhall engine in it. That's a whole...
Yeah, absolutely. And strangely enough, actually, in the 90s, my uncle wanted to take on Peugeot as a dealership, and Vauxhall said no. But, you know, that would have worked out quite nicely today. But, you know, I think, as you say, once the last of the GM cars have gone from the range, there's just nothing to get excited about at all.
There isn't. I mean, there's a lot of, that's a lot with cars in general. I mean, I suppose Ford are still making sort of fast things, but the sort of traditional cars that you've grown up with and like your fast hatch as popular as what they were. People like silly SUV things now. They like Qashqais and the B-Max, Ford, Citroen, Picassos. This is what people like now. Like your Repmobile is a dying thing unless it's a German prestige car. I think it's incredibly sad what happened to Saab, because I think Saab should have had a place today in the kind of this aspirational market. Saab and Volvo kind of sat on their own to the side of the German manufacturers. I mean, GM did make a bit of a mistake. With Saab, really.
They did, yeah. And it's a real shame, actually. I was reading a book by Bob Lutz, who was vice president of GM for a while, and he went through Saab and how basically they were told to obviously stick with the GM platform, but spent so much money in the process of making it a Saab that they almost might as well have started again and it might have been cheaper. But yeah, I think you're right. So for the era we're looking at in this podcast, 70s, 80s, 90s, early 2000s, that's what we're thinking, aren't we?
That's what we grew up with. I mean, that's what I grew up in. I'm 40 years old. How old are you?
I've got a few years.
I think the signal went funny. It keeps dropping out a bit now and again, and you just went, I'm 32. I don't know what it's going to be like until I listen to the recording back, but I think that's what happened there. So you're 32, right. How did we meet anyway? It was you sent me a letter to the letters page on Total Vauxhall.
Yep, that would have been my first.
Now, when was it? Because I worked from Total Vauxhall magazine started in 2002, and I got the job as staff writer in 2005. And the story to that went, I'll give you my whole life story at one point in this podcast, but I was always good at writing in English at school, but I never really had any intention to go to university because I was one of the youngest in my year. I was born in January, so like all the other people in my school year, the older ones were getting cars. And these were people that weren't interested in cars. They didn't care. They didn't know anything about them. And I was completely obsessed with cars. So it was a great pain to me that when people had passed their test in like April 1996, and I had like another year realistically to wait before I could drive. So I had no intention of going to uni. All I wanted to do was to get a job to buy a car. So I would be mobile and have a life and, you know, get a girlfriend and things.
Yeah.
A car was a massive part of your social life then. There was no Facebook or anything. There was not even any mobile phones really back at this point. Your car was
and of course, especially up your way as well. For me, I might be able to have got a bus around Guildford, sort of Woking area, but for you, that was your lifeline, wasn't it?
It was a cultural sort of thing. So my plan was, I was like, I was going to leave school, and I stayed on for 6 years. Did fifth year and got some hires, but nobody, like I went into the careers office and it was useless and I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do. And nobody at any point said to me, why don't you go and become an apprentice mechanic? And I think it was skewed because I had some really good academic results, but I wasn't like interested in sort of being academic, just desperate to get in the road. So my plan was to go and get a car. So I left school and I got a bank loan before I got a job. My parents gave me a hand up with this.
How did you manage that?
I had to get a car. So I think my parents were like, right, we'll go and pay it a bit for the start until you get a job. Because I was like, I can't get a job if I don't have a car. And I think I was just being such a massive pain in the arse by this point. What I stupidly didn't do was my mother had a K-Reg K10 Micra, the very last of the old shape before the bubble Micra, a 1 litre super, I think it was. And it had like 14,000 miles on it. It was like brand new. It was a beautiful car and it had no street cred whatsoever in my eyes. And she said, all you need to do is, you can have this car. All you need to do is take over the finance payments on it every month and I'll go and get a new car. Nope, absolutely not having that at all.
No,
I am having a Vauxhall Nova. That's what I had decided I wanted. What I had in my mind was I wanted a white SR.
Oh, I can sell you one.
And I wanted a white Nova SR. That was the thing that I wanted to have. And it kind of changed. And I was like, the thing with SRs, though, that they were not cheap cars at the time. They were a Group 5 insurance at 1.3 SR, so there was quite a price premium on them.
Expensive.
You could literally buy, because the insurance on like proper hot hatches, you could go and buy an Astra GTE for less than a Nova SR. You could buy a Cavalier SRI for less than one. So I couldn't afford one. It was difficult to find anything. What I did find was I found a Nova 1.2 GL saloon, a four-door. And that wasn't cool at the time.
Gets better.
but I couldn't get the finance on it. It was $2,500, I think. A couple of my mates were like, you can't do this, you can't do this. And I'm like, no, honestly, if I lower this and I put these wheels on it, I says, you know, that's got potential. And I've been proven right, meaning like 20 years down the line. But anyway, I couldn't
find what colour was that then?
Red. Flame red. It was an H red.
Flame pink.
It was nice. It had the little four-spoke steering wheel in it, and it had five-speed gearbox and the plush velour upholstery. In fact, it wasn't a GL, it was an L, because it didn't have a rev counter. Well into that, and I couldn't get it. And then eventually I found a Nova for sale, which was a 1.2 diamond. It had 155 tyres on it, 84,000 in the clocks, but it had clearly been clocked at some point.
Was everything really worn?
The registration was F500FGB, but I think the thing that sold me was it had the SR steering wheel in it, and it had a five-speed box, and it had the SR spoiler. And so I went and bought
it. Oh, nice. Check you out.
It was rough, and I proceeded to destroy it and make it much worse. I mean, that car, that was 1997, and that car was registered in 88, so it was 9 years old, and it was rotting in quite a few different places around the bulkhead and the front chassis. What did I do with it? I bought some PI springs for it and lowered it 50 mil on the standard suspension. I put a set of Cavalier Commander wheels on it out the scrapyard with the 195/60 tyres on it, so they went and scuffed in the arches.
Nice.
And I couldn't afford an exhaust for it because I was skint. But one day, my friend Steve and I were driving up in Bathgate somewhere, and this guy went flying past us. And we drove around the corner, and this Wasp universal exhaust was lying in the middle of the road. It was brand new.
No way.
It was brand new, falling off the guy's car. Because it was universal, I hadn't fitted it properly. So we picked it up. It was still warm, like a bit of roadkill. Chucked it in the boot. So we got that, chopped the tailpipe down, and put this Wasp exhaust on my 1.2 Nova, and that then made it incredibly noisy. Like,
awesome.
There was rumours going about, I got a guy stopped me at a petrol station, rumours are that it's got a 2 litre in it, and I was like, dear God, no, I wish it had. Because of course,
that's just the way I drive it.
At that time, I had no mechanical knowledge of anything at that time. I was 17, 18 years old. I was just an idiot. So I'd like run it. I never wrote it off, but I crashed it into bollards, fences, up grass banking, spinning it out. I had one red wing, one black wing. It was a mess. And what I did get for it, what I bought for 20 quid was a brown Nova Sport interior.
Oh, 20 quid.
20 quid.
What a bargain.
I had a worn bolster on the driver's side, but there were solid seats. So I put them in it.
Yeah,
I put a set of rev counter clocks into it, but I was so stupid that I didn't even know how to wire the rev counter in, so they never worked.
It never worked, it just looked like it was there.
I was just an idiot, and it got really, really rough, and then the front strut parted pinny with the front inner wing where the washer bottle would sit, so the car was like all over the road. And then one of my mates stole it at a house party one night and did something to it. And it was never right since then. And the gear linkage broke. So you would continually have to get under the bonnet and shove. I'd like wrap the ball socket thing with like insulating tape. So I would shove it back in and it would go all right for a while.
Yeah.
It was just a wreck. So I'd paid it off because it wasn't like a lot of finance. It was only like 18 months, I think, to go and pay it off. So then I'd said to my parents again, and they were getting concerned about me driving about in this thing because the police were stopping me. I'd said to them, you know.
So you should have done.
Yeah. But I'd still had no money because, well, my first job in Livingston at the time, around it was called Silicon Glen in Scotland, and there were loads and loads of jobs for people working in factories. So you had NEC, Shin'etsu, Mitsubishi, Motorola. They used to make mobile phones in Scotland and things. You know, this is different times. But everybody would get a job in a factory, and it was really good money. You know, you could go in as an entry-level production operator, and you would get 12 grand. Which, when you're 17 in 1997, is a lot of money. And I failed the aptitude test for all of them.
Really?
Yeah, so eventually I got a job as an apprentice, like a trainee at Plum Centre, the plumber's merchant, as a trainee. So it was like a proper job, but my first wages were like £5,200 a year. I was paid all this. And then I got put up to 7.5, and then I think I got up to 10 after that, which made things a bit more livable. But I'd said to my parents, I was like, look, my Nova's so unsafe and all that. I need to get another car. And they're like, yes, we do. Like, my mother's terribly worried about it. So I was like, so if you're like guaranteed, like, help me get a bit of finance, I'm like, yes, we will help you get a newer car. So then I submitted my list of new cars, and they promptly went, no chance.
No, absolutely not.
I was trying to get a Cavalier Cesaro, which is also known as the Motorsport, which is a one
cool wheels.
Yeah, brilliant looking thing, spectral blue, white, or red. And you could have it as an 1800 single point, or strangely, a rare V6 version.
That's very rare. That's
very rare. A lot of them seem to be registered by the same company, like Cowie Interleasing or something. All registered them.
I don't know.
There was a whole batch of them because the registration's all VR, and they're also known as a Cavalier Motorsport on the V5. And it's because the first registering people registered them wrongly. They're not supposed to be called a motorsport. And that's what I wanted. I wanted a Cavalier Motorsport because I was like, yeah, that'd be a cool car.
That'd be really cool.
1800, what? I mean, it wouldn't be that fast, but a hell of a lot faster than a Nova. You're thinking at the time, you know, you're like, yeah, I could go and put like a 2-litre engine in this and nobody would know.
So what year is this now?
This is 1998, the end of 1998. So I spent the whole half of 97 and all of 98 driving about like an absolute idiot in my Nova, like an idiot boy racer. I never managed to write it off. And I learned a certain amount of driving skill because it would have whatever tyres I could get on it at the time. So it would sometimes have like 185 60s on the back and like 145 tyre-on remolds on the front. It was just whatever. I mean, these were days when you could put £2 of petrol in. Petrol was like 53 pence a litre when I first started driving.
Oh.
You could go and get your Iron Brew bottles and take them to the garage and go and rake up your change with the ashtray and go and get 10 Regal King Size and £2 of petrol to get you back and forth to work for 2 days until you were paid.
That's mega.
Basically all my performance Vauxhalls were vetoed, but my dad had owned a couple of Primeras by this point.
Oh, Primera GTs, did we talk about this?
We can talk about anything, you know.
But no, did we? I think you told us.
Yeah,
I think you said it was quite a good car, actually.
The Primera GT was, Primeras were really good underrated cars, but I had discovered in a garage at Arnold Clark there was a Nissan Primera 1.6 SLX. And unbeknownst to my parents, they thought, like, that Cavalier Cesaro, that's like, oh, no, you can't have that. 90 horsepower. 1.8 single point. The Primera is twin cam 16 valve 1.6, 102 horsepower. It had all the body coloured bumpers. It had a spoiler, 4 electric windows, sunroof, velour seats, beautiful thing. And they said yes to guarantee me on the finance for that. So interestingly, my second car was a Nissan Primera, and I bought a set of Nissan Skyline wheels for it.
Did you? And they fit today?
Yeah, XS Motorsport. I've got a few photos of it. I'll put it on our Facebook page or our Instagram. I've not built yet. First thing, put pictures of Nissans on. But that was a fantastic car. It gave me proper mobility. We ended up lowering it, and I put a Pico exhaust on it, my universal big bore 2 back box, a Sony CD player, 6 benines, and a bass box on it, and it was fantastic. And I actually replaced it with a 2-litre Primera SE because I couldn't get the insurance on a GT in 2001.
So your parents basically dictated which car you could have.
That was all I could do at the time because I had no money because I spent it all on petrol and fags and all the other things that you spent your money on back then.
So it's funny you mentioned that, actually, because a colleague at work, he basically was going to have an SRI 130, his uncle's car, his first car, up from Glasgow way, actually, up your way. Anyway, it rotted through. So his sort of second car, essentially, was a Cavalier GSI, and his dad had a Cavalier CD, 2-litre 8-valve.
Who's this we're talking about?
In fact, you met him. It's the after sales manager from work. So,
I remember, we went out for dinner that night, didn't we, when I was down at yours?
Yeah,
yes.
We did. He ended up, he went out and bought Cavalier GSI, and his dad was like, what have you done? Your mum's going to go mad. It's got GSI badges on it, 2000 written on the back. Go and put the kettle on. Let's get the badges off really quick. And so when his mum came back in, he was like, what the hell's that? He's like, oh, it's just the same as dad's. That's it. And he got away with it. But obviously he couldn't insure it. But you know, this is a few years ago, and I think he took his chances in Glasgow and never got pulled over. In the early days, I suppose your parents.
It was different back then. I remember you would find cars burnt out, find cars abandoned in places because scrap wasn't worth anything. So you would drive it, and then you would find stuff that had been stolen. Because I remember 1996. I wasn't even driving yet. My mate Wardy and I, we discovered there was a Mark 1 Astra GTE which had been stolen and dumped at Livingston Centre in one of the car parks.
Oh, yeah.
And we, like, observed it for a couple of days because cars would just get left for ages, and decided that it was already stolen. So we went and then took the Astra GTE seats out.
Nice.
We did, well, just the front seats out to in with the sockets. Took them out and nicked them, and they sat them in his bedroom. And they were like, he had them. He had them for years. Another one of my mates found there was an Astra that had been dumped and it had a tax disc in it.
Yeah.
And he went and got the tax disc out it, and then got like a razor blade and scraped the pen off it and wrote his own registration on it because it still had a couple of months left on it. It was different times back in the '90s. But as you used to,
yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really get going with Vauxhalls until I was 21 for insurance purposes as well, because I remember when I was 20, my insurance, because I'd got the Primera in December, my insurance would renew in December, but my birthday's in January. Between being 20 and 21, my insurance was going to be like £500 of a difference if I waited to renew when I was 21. Parked the Primera in my garage for a month and didn't insure it, and I spent the whole month playing Championship Manager. And then I got saved a load of money on it. And it was when I was 21, I got to the dizzy heights of being a trainee manager at Plum Centre. And then I was able to start buying Vauxhalls. Then that's when I kind of really got into it. How I ended up working for Total Vauxhall, I started buying loads of different cars, and I started writing about them and writing stories on forums all the time, like what I'd been up to and just blah, 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 writing all this really silly stuff. And it was always very well received. People liked my stupid stories about stuff. Eventually, like Total Vauxhall had an advert in it looking for a staff writer, and they were like, do you think you could write for us? So I wrote them a letter and then with a sample feature in it. And they said, yep, that's good. Can you come to an interview, and can you bring three feature ideas? And I wrote three entire features and brought them to interview. And they were really impressed. And then out of the blue, I ended up getting the job with no kind of formal journalism qualifications. I just had a really complete background in Vauxhall. So then I ended up getting the job on the magazine. That was May 2005, and that's paved the path for my career to get where we are today. And that all just started with lifting brochures out of Wood's garage when I was 8.
That's where it starts for a lot of people, I think, and I reckon a lot of people who'll be listening to this will probably be the same. It's those early memories, isn't it, when you're growing up and a teenager.
Your dad had one. I mean, Vauxhalls were like almost, because I lived in a village that had a Vauxhall garage in it, like Cavaliers were like the standard. Cavalier SRI was the ultimate dad car.
And the image changed, really, didn't it? They were
well sought after. There's a, what we'll have to do is we'll have to do a deep dive. Are you familiar with the documentary made in 1992 about all the sales reps? It's on YouTube.
It's the overview of the range, isn't it? Going through every different type of car. Is that the one?
It was a thing done for BBC Two or something. It's a documentary, and they go and follow a load of sales reps about and talk to them. And you've got a guy who's got a Cavalier GL. There's one who's got a Primera. One who's got an Astra CD saloon that he's just got. But the most famous bit, there's quite a famous bit in it where this guy, he gets a Maestro diesel. He asks for a diesel car, and he has to go and hand back the keys to his 2-litre Cavalier, and it's given a Maestro diesel Clubman. And
that sounds awful.
I mean, it's the most shameful thing that you imaginable to a sales rep at that time. It's a real snapshot of what was going on back then.
I'm going to have to go and watch that.
I'll have to go and find it on YouTube, because that's a deep diveable thing. Yeah, I'll have to find sales rep doc and writing that down. Because it's really fascinating. It all starts back sort of then, and then you get stuck with it. And Vauxhall's never had the sort of critical acceptance in the sort of mainstream, They're always like been pushed to the side with the love and the adulation that it gets given to the Volkswagen Golf, the Peugeots and the Ford Cosworths. They've got a thing all of their own, and the Vauxhalls are just pushed to one side, but even more sort of like worthy.
I mean, you are right with that as well. Within my work, which is, won't name it, but it's a supercar type company. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows me as the guy who loves Vauxhalls. And actually, when they know that, everyone sends me like, oh, their dad owned one or their granddad owned one. It's ingrained in so many people. And, that's where my love came from. And so, I sent in that article.
You sent that letter. I can't remember what year it was. I mean, I could probably find it because all the Total Vauxhall magazines are in my parents' garage.
That will be when I first got the car. So it will be 2005 or 2006.
So what car did you get? 2005, so that's 15 years ago. So you were 17. What was your first car?
It was absolutely mint. Mark II Astra GT 16 valve, one owner car. I think it done 38,000 miles.
Age 17, and here was me with a 1.2 Nova, and you've got a valve Astra.
Yeah.
What happened to it?
Well, you know, when you're 17, you go everywhere flat out, don't you? So I think I had it for about a year and a bit before I wrapped it around a lamppost. And this was a big motorway lamppost.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That, a year and a bit's actually really good, to be fair. I mean, I was a danger to myself in that Nova. So to have like to have to one of the most, the fastest and also the worst handling hot hatch of the year as well. What a winning combination.
Of course,
the Vauxhall.
Oh, it was terrifying because I didn't change the dampers or the springs at all. So that was I think mine was an 89. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it was an old car by that point already. And I first week of driving, I remember being five up, doing over about 130. And I remember it starting to understeer on a dual carriageway. I just thought, this is it, we're not going to make it. But anyway, that was the first week, and I did make it just over a year and a bit. But the car was mint, and I just kicked myself, absolutely kicked myself.
There's always the reason. Everybody's got one or two cars.
So I sent that in.
Was that a picture of the smashed car that you sent?
No, this is when it was still in one complete car. And I sent you a picture or a couple of pictures, and you're like, oh, it's got analog clocks. It hasn't got a digital dash.
Yes, that's an extremely rare thing, that to have analog clock, because the Astra GT was famously known for having a digital dash. But as an option, you could have rev counters, but they went to 8,000 RPM, which just that fascinates me no end. That is such an unbelievably rare thing. What was the discussion about the clocks? Did you keep the clocks out at Runnin', did you?
I did, and then I eventually sold it. I think I sold them for quite good money, but looking back on it, I should have kept hold of them, really, because I've never seen any since.
Somebody had a set for sale at Billing one year, but they weren't cheap, as they shouldn't be. You know, they're extremely rare. And I was like, do I want them? Do I want them? And I was like, I decided not to at the time. I think, I can't even remember what they were, but they're even more expensive now. Yeah, so you wrote as a you wrote me a letter about clocks, 8,000 RPM clocks. And then time went on, I got you a variety of features for the magazine, and you came out and did some work at the shows and things. You very nearly worked for the magazine a couple of times as well.
I did, great times. It was really good.
I got an editor's job in 2009, 29 years old, and I got to be the editor. Yeah, that was brilliant. That was a lot of fun through sort of 2009 to 2010. And eventually, I finished up from Total Vauxhall in 2011 and moved back to Scotland because I had plans to do other sort of things, and future publishing were being a bit, they were making like quite a lot of cuts at the time. And
it was the right time, probably.
It was the right time. Alex Ferguson, that magazine, I went right out at the top.
Yeah, good work.
I knew that it couldn't be maintained the way that I had. It immediately got pages removed from it, the issue after I left. So I left. 2011 was the year. We had 2 years in a row with John Cleland in the touring car at Castle Coombe. We were out on track with Cleland at the same time. And I'd said,
that's fantastic.
I was like, this is the peak. I mean, you can't top this.
Yeah. Was, Total Vauxhall Live, wasn't it?
Total Vauxhall, that's a brilliant idea for a show. Unfortunately, it didn't get big crowds in because you had to sort of build it, but it was the best one of the lot. It was fantastic. We had a track day and a show at the same time, and Castle Coombe was a wonderful setting. I really always loved going there. It was unfortunate, the timing of it. If they'd done that show in 2006, for example, and let it build, then it could have been something really amazing. So I was just glad that we did ultimately get to do it, because it was a show for the enthusiasts.
It was good. I mean, getting to drive on track with John Cleland in one of his old touring cars was just a highlight of mine as well. I mean, I only briefly saw him because he just disappeared into the distance, clearly. But yeah, mega show, absolutely fantastic. I don't know, will it happen again? It seems unlikely, doesn't it?
Car culture isn't what it was anyway. From its absolute peak in the 90s and 2000s, nothing lasts forever. It was like a period in time. I'd always bought magazines, going right through from buying like Royal Rovers and then Games Console magazines. And I used to buy Whop Car and read it religiously for all the spec and all that. And then I ended up, I saw Max Power with this leery yellow Carlton on it. And I bought it, and that just blew my mind. Everything in it, and this is when Max Power was about tuning cars and behaving badly. Yeah. Brilliant. I mean, all the car magazines completely lost the plot with fiberglass later on in it.
That era,
it was actually about like lunatics, like the 300 horsepower RS turbos. Fantastic, and you know, it became like a parody of itself and everything. What hot new trends are coming in this year? And it's like, to hell with the trends. Go and put a massive engine in something.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really good Facebook group, which is Max Power something, and it's fantastic. Just seeing the old projects that are on there, how Delta kits, huge rear wings, it was ridiculous, but also fantastic at the same time, before we moved to sort of the OEM plus that we had sort of in the later Total Vauxhall days. But be right.
I missed out in the first bit. I mean, a few of my mates are a few years older, and they were kind of in sort of, because it started kicking off sort of about sort of 92, 93. That's when the cruise scene sort of started kicking off, and it built up and things. And I wish, I do kind of wish I was a few years older. So in like the 90s, I could have been out at like the cruises in my Cavalier rather than
that, been cool.
Shitty little Nova. But there we go. Yes. Yeah. So there we go. I think we've rattled on for long enough for this first attempt for it. I think it's gone fine. We're going to be doing this regularly now. We're going to try and build it up and get some guests on it. We're going to use some better recording equipment. But I say this is just our test. So I shall.
Well, that's a good plan. I'm done today. I've done enough welding now that my knees are knackered. So I think I'm going to have a beer instead. That sounds like a far better idea to me.
Sounds like an excellent idea. Right, I shall catch up with you in a couple of days' time.
Sounds good.
Cheers.
Right, thanks.